Hi, this is Colleen Power Kupka in Scottsdale, Arizona. Welcome to Rejuvenate Your Hormones and Wellness. So how are you doing today? You're getting this on Wednesday. How was your weekend? I just got off from a lovely weekend. I mean, the weather here, you can't even complain. And I was at a hormone conference. I think I've done about 48 hours this month. And, you know, what's been really cool about it, well, actually, between the end of August and now, you know, when I go to these conferences, I learn so much, even though I've been to them. I can't even tell you. But you learn a lot of updated information. I found myself this time around kind of getting a little bit of upset, meaning that when you go throughout history and you see all the misinformation, you know, especially from like 23 years ago, and even today, that providers and different studies, they just compare things that are just wrong. Meaning, I'll get into it, but it really, I think women took a hit on it and it affected us, you know, and I think that, you know, we suffered needlessly, you know, through menopause and through fear that was all created. So I titled this episode, Think Estradiol is Just About Hot Flashes, Think Again. You know, and I was thinking this weekend too, like, you know, when I went in for hormones, why did I go in? Well, first of all, you know, I was suffering with symptoms. I didn't really want to be on these things. I mean, at that time, I was just like, you know, but I was suffering. I didn't want that, you know, back then there was so much myth and didn't want anything going into my body that was foreign. But regardless, I go into the clinic and I get diagnosed with menopause. I'm handed some hormones, cream form, which you've heard my complaints about that in the last episode. I mean, it's good for some people. It just wasn't good for me. And I went off. But I was thinking, like, if someone had taken the time to explain to me all the benefits and the importance, you know, of not wanting some parts of our health to deteriorate. When I'm talking about this, I'm talking cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, possibly dementia. No one explained this. So if they had, I think I probably would have stayed on, maybe sought a different provider. I don't know. But I wasn't really given, you know, the full information. And sometimes we need that, right? As patients. So we all know that estradiol is the predominant female hormone and testosterone is the predominant male hormone. However, men, like we know, make testosterone, but they also aromatize that testosterone into estradiol, just a small portion of it. But that portion is so critical to their health, meaning helps keep their arteries clean, helps prevent cardiovascular disease. Studies are showing that less issues with MI and death and mortality. You know, it also helps with their bone. Women, we've always made estrogen, but we've also made a good amount of testosterone throughout our life. And I tell you, it's important, just as important as estradiol. Against bone breakage, all the same kind of thing, cardiac disease, you know, all that kind of stuff. And when we lose it, it sure is odd that all of a sudden we just start having all these health issues, right? Don't you agree? So I always like to look back in history, like, where did this come from and how did it get to where it is today? So the word estrogen actually is derived from the Greek. And it literally means verve or inspiration, but figuratively sexual passion or desire, with the suffix gen, meaning producer of. Thus, the word estrogen itself means producing passion. References to menopause date back to the 300s. And actually back then, described the cessation of menstruation as occurring during the age of 40. That was a little bit difficult to get out, sorry. The term menopause derived from the Greek word men, meaning month, and pauses, meaning stop. I just am kind of scrolling through time. And then March and April of 1886, they decided to take cow ovarian tissues and inject them into German women. And it was a success. It actually, you know, they tried to attempt to reverse some of the symptoms. And the patients experienced a dramatic reduction in sexual dysfunction. After switching to non-ovarian tissues, though, the treatment was ineffective. Then in 1889, Dr. Charles Edward Brown Sagard, he was known as the father of endocrinology, experimented on himself with an extract of guinea pig and dog testicles. This injection resulted in his claim that he had rejuvenated himself and suggested that these extracts may have the same effect on women. So ultimately, this was the seed for commercialization of sex hormone therapy. Then in 1890, Merck and Company, they produced an ovarian powder form and pill form treatment for menopause. It was made from powdered cow ovaries that successfully treated symptoms of menopause. And moving on in time, the early 1900s, they saw a rise of commercialization menopause treatments that ranged in substance and even theoretical efficacy. The role of estrogen was first accurately described in guinea pigs in 1917. In North America, the pregnant mare's urine purification into conjugated equine estrogen, CEE, brand name Premarin, it became highly lucrative in the 1940s and the 1950s. And this is what they used in the WHI study. Now, I want to talk about the WHI. I'm not going to go way deep into it because actually I think in the next episode, I'm going to talk about it. But this was a study that was done 23 years ago. And it was the largest randomized study to date, evaluating the effect of HRT on the most causes of death in postmenopausal women, such as cardiovascular disease, cancer, and osteoporosis. And it was published in 2002 after a 5.2-year trial. And the study showed increases of heart disease, cancer, and however, there were some reductions in osteoporotic fractures and colorectal cancer. Due to the results of the study, it was stopped. Everybody went crazy. And basically, until 2006, they realized that, hey, you know what? It's not causing some things. But what they were using, where I'm going at, they were using the conjugated equine estrogen, just Premarin. And they were also using a synthetic medroxyprogesterone. People today try to go back at those studies and try to compare it to, or I don't know what they were, to estradiol and progesterone and create the same results. Wrong. They're not the same animals. So as we go through this, there is not any trial out there that I'm aware that estradiol, or matter of fact, back then, the CEE, the equine estrogen, by itself, it didn't have the issues. It didn't have increased breast cancer. Matter of fact, 2006, they showed that it didn't. And they weren't having all the other issues like microvascularizations and all this stuff because of the medroxyprogesterone. So that is a wild animal. It is not progesterone. And estradiol is not made from a horse. So it's hard to sit there and go back. But, you know, I look at these studies and it's just amazing. I start getting into them and it's like, you think they're talking about estradiol and progesterone, and they'll even call medroxyprogesterone progesterone. It's not. It is chemically structured different. At any rate, I'm not going to go off on my tangent anymore, but if it's confusing for me, how can it not be confusing for you? And because I look at these studies and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, but it put a halt to us, you know, getting treatment. And actually women that were older than me, and it has put fear, you know, that I still today think affects us, obviously so, because when I go back to look at these studies, you still, people are comparing something that there's no comparison. So let's talk about this. What is perimenopause? So perimenopause, the average length is about 4 years. And for some women, this stage may last only a few months, or get this, it can continue up to 10 years. The level of estrogen, the female hormone in your body, rises and it falls unevenly during this period of time. And you got to be careful during this period of time because you can get pregnant, okay? So if you're on anything that might make you pregnant, like progesterone, sweet testosterone, you want to make sure that you have birth control, right? But at any rate, your menstrual cycle, it may lengthen or shorten. And you may begin having menstrual cycles in which your ovaries don't release an egg, meaning you don't ovulate. You can also experience menopause-like symptoms such as hot flashes, sleep problems, vaginal dryness. And yeah, there are treatments to help these symptoms, and I help people all the time with it in my office. So, what are the symptoms of perimenopause? Well, irregular periods, like we talked about. They may, your flow might be light to heavy. You may skip some periods. Hot flashes and sleep problems. Sweating. The intensity, length, and frequency can vary. And sometimes your sleep pattern's just unpredictable. Mood swings. Irritability. Increased risk of depression, which may happen during perimenopause. So if you're finding that your mood is swinging a bit, yeah, you're not going crazy. It's what it is. Mood changes may also be caused by factors that are not related to the hormone change of perimenopause. You can have vaginal and bladder problems due to the estrogen decreasing. So it's more difficult sometimes for your vaginal tissues to be able to lubricate. And it can make, you know, sex painful, right? It can also cause you to have an increase in urinary tract infections and loss of tissue tone, which may contribute to the urinary incontinence. Decreasing fertility. So as ovulation becomes irregular, your ability to conceive will decrease. And like I said, it is possible to get pregnant during this time. And it's like a yo-yo effect sometimes when you're in this perimenopause, you know, area of your life. When do you become menopausal, or what do we consider it to be? After 1 year without a period. So what hormones can you be taking during perimenopause? Well, progesterone, I find, helps if people are suffering from anxiety, not being able to sleep, hot flashes, mood swings. And also, I'm going to tell you this. This weekend, everything I was learning, it's really important to protect your breast, okay? Breast cancer comes up 4 or 5 years before you even know you have it. Guess what's going to protect? You got it. Progesterone. So important, okay? And testosterone, you know, people like to go on that too for endurance, brain fog, and weight gain. Definitely not estradiol. And I want to back it up to testosterone. If you're on birth control pills, your testosterone is kind of depleted a bit. It's just not available for use. And so you're going to feel it possibly. And that's why women come in. So in menopause, you're no longer fertile. You don't have to worry about getting pregnant. And don't ask me why. When I went into menopause, I was just like, I didn't want to be in menopause. My mom was like, aren't you happy about it? Like, you don't have to get a period anymore. And I'm like, no, I wasn't happy about it. I never had bad ones. If a woman undergoes surgical removal of her ovaries, she is now considered instant menopause. And at that time, you got to start protecting yourself. There's this thing also called the Swan Study, and it was found there were some key differences in the menopause transition across races. Hispanic and Black women reach earlier than white Chinese and Japanese women. Did not know that, to tell you the truth. They can also experience some menopausal symptoms for 10 years or more, which is twice as long as Chinese, Japanese, and white women. Hot flashes and night sweats, you know, they're the hallmark symptoms of menopause, right? Now I'm going to tell you something else. When you're in your late 40s and your 50s, perimenopause, moving into menopause, there are some things that are happening to you that you just don't feel. And one of those things is cardiovascular disease. It starts to build, okay? As your estradiol is coming down, you're going to start seeing some changes possibly. So it's really important the minute you get out of perimenopause to get yourself protected. If you have PCOS, it will get worse during menopause as the estrogen goes away at menopause, but it will get worse for you guys. So where is estradiol made in women? Well, it's made in our ovaries, our adrenals, and also too, get this, visceral fat. So sometimes some people will have an elevated, you know, estradiol level or estrogen level due to that visceral fat. So it's important to try to not carry so much of it. In men, where is estradiol made? Well, it's made in the testes, the adrenals. What does it do? Well, it protects us in so many different ways, as I've been talking about. Get this, heart disease, stroke, cardiovascular disease, bone health, Alzheimer's. It runs in my family. I want to protect my brain. Memory loss, UTIs, vaginal atrophy, real. Urinary incontinence. So here are the signs and symptoms of low estradiol. Do you have any of these? Do you have hot flashes? Do you have vaginal dryness? Does it hurt to have sex? Have you lost interest in sex? Do you urinate frequently? Do you have an increase in urinary infections? Do you have difficulty in sleeping? Do you suffer from breast tenderness? Does your mood shift and you don't know why? Do you have difficulty with concentration? Also, do you find that all of a sudden you're getting belly fat just right around your middle? Can't get rid of it for anything? Well, as our estrogen declines, we accumulate more of it. And the problem with that is excess belly fat is a cluster of symptoms that become more common after menopause. And guess what it's known as? You probably hear the term all the time, metabolic syndrome. So what's so bad about this metabolic syndrome? Well, I'll tell you what, it increases your risk for heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes. Metabolic syndrome is diagnosed when a person has three of the following, okay? Like we were talking, belly fat, abdominal obesity, just can't get the stuff off, high triglycerides, low good cholesterol, HDL, high blood pressure, high blood sugar. So what can happen during this time is that your arteries become more vulnerable to disease. They start getting thicker and stiffer. So beyond diminished hormones, other issues can increase risk for metabolic syndrome. And what are they? Well, we all hear about this. Smoking, history of heavy drinking, stress, that'll do it, right? being postmenopause, high-fat diet, sedentary lifestyle. If you haven't tried pickleball, get out and do it. I'm not kidding you. I have become like this freak on it, and I kind of backed off a bit due to the summer, but in all honesty, it is so, I had one of my patients tell me she no longer has osteopenia. Her chiropractor was so happy that she was out there playing pickleball, and so it does help, ladies. So in talking about our arteries, have you heard of atherosclerosis? Well, it's what I was talking about with the metabolic syndrome. It's a gradual buildup of plaque in the walls of your arteries. And arteries, what do they do? Well, they carry oxygen-rich blood to organs and our tissues throughout our body. What happens when we start getting this atherosclerosis, it starts building up this plaque, which is a sticky substance made of fat, cholesterol, calcium, and other substances. And as the plaque builds up, your arteries get thicker and harder. They can take a look at this on ultrasound, and they can take a look at your carotid artery to see how you're doing in that area. Now, I want to talk to you about a study, and it's called Estrogen Replacement and Atherosclerosis Trial. In this study, what they found, women were randomized to receive estrogen 1 milligram or placebo for 2 years. They did the carotid ultrasound after that period of time, but they did measure it, okay, every six months for up to 2 years. And what they found is that the women in the study that received the estradiol had no increase in their carotid artery intima thickness, while the group receiving placebo had a significant increase in the thickness of that artery. So this study provided a high level of evidence that women on estrogen without evidence of carotid artery atherosclerosis slows down the progress of atherosclerosis. Consistent with these findings, there were very many observational studies that were reported that administration of estrogen to postmenopausal women reduces the incidence of coronary artery disease and that prevents myocardial infarction, heart attack. More than 40 observational studies have shown postmenopausal women that are on estrogen decreases their cardiovascular morbidity and mortality incidences. When we get into coronary heart disease, in premenopausal women, coronary heart disease is extremely rare. Even what's considered, you know, a high-risk population, the incidence of cardiovascular complications is much lower in premenopausal women than in men. After menopause, like we were talking about, the protection for coronary artery disease in women is gradually lost. Women typically develop the condition several years later than men. So our estrogen's gone, this stuff starts to happen and gently climb. But you know what? Women are largely unaware of their risk for heart disease, which is more likely to kill them than all forms of cancer combined. And I'm even talking breast cancer. Factors that may influence an earlier start to menopause include worse cardiovascular health during reproductive years, cigarette smoking, and possibly genetics also play a part. So there's a study called the Framingham Study, and what they showed was cardiovascular incident rates were lower in premenopausal years than postmenopausal, which we just talked about, right? It also noted that women experiencing natural menopause between the ages of 45 and 49 years or a surgical menopause, which is instant, were more likely to develop heart disease, you guys, than premenopausal women. There were significantly more cardiovascular events among postmenopausal women compared to premenopausal women of the same age. Here's another study, and it's called Clinical Study HRT to Prevent Cardiovascular Disease, What Studies Show, How to Advise Patients. It states that decreased estrogen levels has detrimental effects on vasculature, lipid profiles, and fibrolytics. and our coagulation systems. I can go on and on about that. Nurses Health study reported that HRT reduced the development of primary cardiovascular disease. In a retrospective secondary prevention trial of cardiovascular mortality found almost 100% survival for 10 years in estrogen users compared to those with 60% in non-users. More than 40 observational studies have shown the administration of estrogen to postmenopausal women substantially reduces both cardiovascular morbidity and mortality. Am I driving the point home? Another study, in the study of sex hormone therapy and prevention of cardiovascular disease in menopausal women, found this. Reduction in the progression of atherosclerosis was not seen in patients on statins. However, reduction in the progression of atherosclerosis was only seen in those patients on estradiol. So I'm going to walk back to that study 23 years ago. When you might be hearing about increase in heart events, it was the CEE, the horse estrogen, and the synthetic progestin, not progesterone. It also was interesting to note that what had occurred, that women that made it through the first year, they did fine. So let me tell you about these women. I'm just going to go there a little bit more. They were in between the ages, I think, 50 and 79 years old. They weren't the healthiest. Number one, they were 10 years past the majority of the patients were about 63 years old, okay? So that makes them 10 to 12 years out past menopause. That was the issue. They were smokers. They were overweight. They gave them hormones, and all of a sudden they had some microvascularizations, which they called dementia. They thought it caused that. No. And by the way, it resolved. So the issues in there, not healthy, right? Low thresholds, synthetic progestin, I don't want to call it progesterone, and a horse. Estradiol, which, by the way, has many different types of estrogens that were foreign to our body. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about breast cancer in this, okay? So what are some breast cancer risks? Well, we know a lot of it, sort of, right? Synthetic HRT, which I'm talking about right now, okay? The horse, you know, estrogen, although by itself it did okay until they added that nasty progestin. Pesticides, genetic, obesity, diet, alcohol, tobacco, you know, like, and lack of exercise. There are more than 60 published studies indicating that estrogen can be safely given to women with, get this, with a history of breast cancer. There was a 9.4% with reoccurrence with estrogen, compared to 20.3% without. And as I said, it eventually came out, I think it was 2006, that, hey, even the horse estrogen was actually protective and did not have the issues because it was by itself. So what are some preventions? Well, avoid all risk factors. Okay. I hope that we can, right? We're human. Antioxidants, CoQ10, avoid soy, omega-3 oils, progesterone versus progestin, nasty stuff, testosterone. And I will say this, a diet rich in plant-based foods, meaning get lots of greens, veggies, fruits, cut down the inflammation, which a lot of this comes from. And when I'm talking about cutting down inflammation, I'm saying maybe cut back on some of the protein. I know that some people love it, but hey, I've been in the cath labs, okay? Just so you know. And I've seen some nasty stuff in there with high protein diets. I see some nasty LDLs, cholesterols, apolipoprotein Bs. They're just not good. Can't tell me it's good, high protein. Okay. No matter what the bodybuilders tell you or the guy at the gym, your trainer. Cutting out inflammatory foods such as dairy. Okay. When I'm talking dairy, I'm talking milk, cheese, cottage cheese. Do I have them occasionally? Yes. But do you need them on every single solitary day? You know, I never believed in this stuff. Well, I didn't. So I have asthma and, you know, I hit the chiropractor's office one time and they're like, you know what? Do you drink milk and cheese and all that? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, cheese is breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And along with my little rotisserie chicken, and because, you know, I was moving on the go and I needed to eat quick. And they said, try to cut the cheese. You'll notice a difference in your asthma. Well, wouldn't you know? And then, you know, I moved through life and I got my culinary, I think you know that, certificate in plant-based nutrition. And when I went into that program, I wasn't feeling very good. And I walked out feeling a whole lot better. I cut a lot of protein. I didn't cut it all the way through. It was this raw culinary school. And I'm in there doing my thing. And then at night, I would head off to the next town to get a lamb burger. But I don't know why I'm thinking about that, but it is funny. So, but what I'm saying is cut back on that stuff. It will help, okay? So, relevant clinical studies do not support a major risk of cancers with estrogen alone, okay? That's what we've been talking about. Only with the combination of progestins or PrimPro. That medroxyprogesterone is the culprit. Study, estradiol therapy and breast cancer risk in perimenopausal women, a systemic review and meta-analysis. The objective was to investigate the association between estradiol therapy and incidence of breast cancer, taking into consideration of different types of combined progestin, the duration of exposure, and the type of regimen. Conclusion, estradiol alone therapy carries no risk for breast cancer. While the breast cancer risk varies according to the type of what? Progesterone. Okay, and I'm going to say this too, girls. I get patients, and I just had one lately, 52 years old, and there's a concern about fibroids and stuff, but we don't know if she's in menopause. Her OB doesn't know, so electing to stay on. She's 52. She's got norethindrone in that birth control pill. It is worse than a progestin. I don't know what the answer is, but this is what I know. Every day that you're on that stuff, there is an increase for breast cancer. That's what I will say. And so sometimes we just have to figure out when to get off that stuff, right? All right, enough of that, but I always think about people. So brain, let's look at that. Per the National Institute of Aging, it states that estimates vary, but experts suggest that more than 6 million Americans, get that, most of them 65 years or older, may have Alzheimer's. Do you think this is a health crisis? Do you think we should be thinking, what can we do to prevent it? Alzheimer's is currently ranked as the 7th leading cause of death in the United States and is the most cause of dementia among older adults. My grandma had it. Thank God my mom did not have it. My aunt had it. And let me tell you, it is just not a cool thing. There is an 83% decreased risk of Alzheimer's in estrogen users if started within a 10-year window of menopause. So important, as I've been saying, go into menopause, get onto estradiol, and protect yourself. MRIs of the brain of the women in the study show that those who had taken estrogen supplements throughout menopause had a larger hippocampus, which is important structure for memory and sense of place. The women that were not on estradiol had smaller hippocampuses. Other studies shown that women who start estrogen supplements several years after menopause do not benefit from the same positive effect on the hippocampus. As I said, the age of estradiol therapy is paramount. If estrogen therapy is started at menopause and used for more than 10 years, there is a reduction of up to 83% in the lifetime risk of Alzheimer's disease. Let's talk about bone loss. Fractures are a huge thing as we age. I see a lot of women with osteopenia are heading down the track of osteoporosis. They're heading down the track of fractures. They can have a fall or not. Did you know that estradiol plays a major role in the maintaining a woman's skeletal integrity, loss of bone? So maybe our height, you know? It also helps with our teeth. It's bone. In physically frail elderly women, 9 months of HRT significantly increased their bone mass density compared with placebo in clinically important skeletal regions. As far as I'm concerned, there is no age limit on this stuff. You have all these elderly people in these nursing homes that suffer from falls. Maybe if they had a little estradiol, they would be fine. Okay. It'll also help with urinary incontinence, right? Such a cheap drug, you know, but it's not a, you know, a high grade pharmaceutical price drug, right? Clinical studies have unanimously shown that any kind of HRT is capable to reducing bone turnover, reducing bone reabsorption, and increasing bone mineral density. Both high bone turnover and low bone mineral density are risk factors for bone fracture. Women that have discontinued estrogen for 5 years or longer have an excessive risk for hip fracture. So let's say you decide, like your doctor tells you, hey, you're at an age, get off of it. Okay, now what starts to happen? Well, we start to have problems. There was a study, large Islam and study, and it was found that the risk of fractures in postmenopausal women increased in 3 years following the publication of WHI. So they were off, and 3 years later, they started having issues. An Italian analyst estimated 43,000 extra bone fractures per year in the U.S. that were associated with decreased HRT use. So it's not sad or what? A more recent longitudinal observational study conducted women that who discontinued HRT in a high risk of fractures compared to those who continued therapy, which has an important effect on women's health. Get this, if you're taking calcium and you're taking it by yourself, it ain't going to do what you think. You need to add estradiol. High calcium intake by itself is not effective in preventing the accelerated loss of bone that occurs after menopause. You have plenty of calcium in your body. It's just not being transported. What helps? What helps transport it? Well, think about it this way. Vitamin D, 10,000 IUs per day, based on literature. Also, estradiol, testosterone, and sodium. Those biophosphates, they don't rebuild bone, okay? They only slow down bone destruction. So after a while, you're going to stop those DEXA scans because they're not going to show any difference. When you do a DEXA scan, it only shows the past now. So it requires 2 to 4 years to see a change. What is good is an NTX. It's a urine test or blood test. You know, you start getting on hormones. You take it initially, you know, get a baseline. And then get on hormones, and you can see within 3 to 6 months improvement. And the stuff that I saw last weekend was amazing. So important, you know, we need to guard our bones, right? Weight-bearing exercises, of course, right? So some people will ask me this stuff, what's the difference between oral, transdermal, and all that kind of thing? And I'm going to tell you, cardiovascular protection, important for oral, okay? But not, some people want transdermal. That's just fine, but you're not going to get the cardio protection. And where you apply it to is also really important. So if somebody's telling you put it behind your knees, you're probably not going to have such a good effect. Where you're going to have good effect is on the labia or even a suppository. It's going to really help down there for vaginal atrophy, UTIs, you know, lubrication. Throw a little bit of testosterone, you're good to go. What do I think? Also, people ask me about pellets. I'm fine with pellets. Not for estradiol, though, because I want the cardio protection. The other thing, too, that I have found, if somebody makes a mistake and you're not in menopause and they put that estradiol pellet in there, you're going to be miserable until that thing wears off, because once it's in, you know, you can't really do anything about it. What I personally like with my women, yes, I have women and men getting pellets, but I like subcutaneous injections. It's the same thing, subcutaneous, that's where it goes, at least for testosterone. And I do believe we get really good levels, meaning that, you know, think about it this way. I'm not going to be arguing back and forth about how pellets work, but you start with a pellet, you go and you do a peak, and then you're on a downhill slide, essentially, for a little while, and then you're back up again. So you're up and down. What I like about subcutaneous just injection, you're not going through that. Okay, that's just me. Wow. I can't believe that we're done already. But I, you know what? I want to thank you so much for listening to me this week. In no way here should you take this as medical advice. The information here is only of my opinion, my thoughts, entertainment. It is not meant to prescribe medical advice. If you have any questions for treatment, please address it with your provider. On that note, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they are released. You can either subscribe right now on the app you're using and listen to the podcast, or you can check out my website at rejuvenatemyhormones.com. And yes, we do have a clinic in Scottsdale called Rejuvenate Hormone and Weight Loss. Lastly, I do have a quick favor to ask you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, which I certainly hope you have, I would love to read your reviews in Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And I'd really like to get some ideas. You know, if you would like me to cover a topic, I would love to do it. I am all about that. I'm all about learning, teaching, and that kind of thing, okay? At any rate, please include your topics so I can cover them in future episodes if you decide to do that. And I just want to wish you a cheers to a week of rejuvenating your hormones and wellness. Take care now. See you next week.